From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Primary election results continue to trickle in and will for the coming weeks. We're still waiting to see the top two for many races, including governor. But some of the most followed and talked about contests have been decided. There are already some lessons we can take away from the primary. Blake Jones is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook, and he joins us now with the latest updates. Welcome back, Blake.
Good to be here.
So as it stands this morning, Steve Hilton, Javier Becerra are the top two vote getters with Tom Steyer in third. So far, just days after the primary, what are the big takeaways from the governor's race so far?
Yeah, I think that things are playing out roughly the way that pollsters were expecting heading into the election. Hilton and Becerra were, projected to be doing the best. I think the largest takeaway, if Tom Steyer is not able to advance, is, going to be again that the massive wealth that he has poured into this campaign is, being rejected by California voters. He still has a chance to make up some ground with some of these late ballots being counted, especially if they break, especially toward Democrats and especially toward progressives. But, we could see a massive rejection of billionaires in this election if he loses.
So Governor Newsom did not endorse a candidate in the primary, but his team was sounding off a little bit in the hours after the primary. It was in Playbook yesterday. A Newsom aide just couldn't contain his glee at some candidates dropping out.
Yeah, so one of Newsom's top communications folks, Izzy Garden, could not hold back and did note that some of the candidates who had been most critical of the governor conceded within an hour of polls closing. And you've also seen a lot of top Newsom political aides going to Javier Becerra's team since he had this big surge, just within the last couple of months. And, I think that shouldn't be all that surprising. Javier Becerra has been, the least really critical candidate of Newsom across the board and probably the most resembling the status quo when it comes to policy. And, I know even memorably in one of the debates, he gave Newsom and graded Newsom an A for effort on his approach to homelessness.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. I mean, there were some candidates on the debate and also just on one-on-one interviews, even when I interviewed them on the show, they weren't super critical of Governor Newsom. He is still governor. You don't know what his future is going to hold politically. If a Democrat remains as governor come next year, and let's say it is Javier Becerra, would he just be a continuation of Newsom's policies, or are there some key differences between the two?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there would be some differences. You can just even look at the different ways that they talk about, gas prices and the environment. I know this has kind of become a flashpoint as Tom Steyer has hit Becerra for receiving a donation from Chevron. In contrast, you see, Gavin Newsom and his office just over the last month have been kind of pillorying Chevron over and over again and blaming them and accusing them of marking up their gas prices to inflate profits. So I think that on the environment, you might see a little bit more, moderation in some ways from Javier Becerra. And you've also seen Javier Becerra has been a little bit, more full-throated in his support of healthcare for undocumented residents of California. He hasn't laid out exactly specifically what, that would look like under him, but Newsom has scaled back some of the coverage for folks as the state has faced budget deficits.
Yeah, well, as it stands this morning, the top vote getter is Steve Hilton, a Republican. He was at the state capitol yesterday, sounding pretty good or feeling pretty good about the results so far. What has stood out to you about, the immediate days after the primary, how he is sounding with, potential voters and supporters?
Yeah, I mean, he's a pretty, optimistic guy when he's on the stump. So this isn't too surprising. But probably the most notable thing I think that he said was on election night, which is when he started invoking Arnold Schwarzenegger on the stump. I mean, That seems pretty clear that although he's got the Trump endorsement and like has known Trump for years, that he might be, if not pivoting his messaging during this runoff, making some of this pitch to California's many, no party preference voters and trying to remind them of a little bit less polarized time as he fights an uphill battle.
Yeah, and there were more Republicans who turned in their ballots early on. They really took advantage of early voting compared to Democrats. I mean, there's been talk that there were Democratic voters just holding on to their ballots because the gubernatorial race was just so congested and crowded. And there were these like curveballs, of course, which is weeks into the primary. I mean, is that a problem looking ahead for just the Democratic Party in California? I mean, the fact that their voters like might be a little confused about who to throw their support behind. Of course, in a top two in the general, if there is a Democrat, it's a more clear decision. But I guess just in the future, like the state of the Democratic Party, they didn't even endorse a candidate this go around.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's yeah, obviously, like you said, in the runoff, it's less likely to be a problem. If the governor's race does end up being a Democrat versus a Republican, it's probably a little bit of an easier choice for some of those voters. But I do think, to your point, it's emblematic of a larger sort of issue. Like, I mean, a lot of Democrats take pride in not being as top down as Republicans are in the Trump era, and not having as much kind of traffic copping in some of these races as to who in like a large crop of Democrats is going to run. But yeah, I mean, but I think that this problem of not kind of culling the herd is playing out in a lot of the House races this cycle. There are a lot of crowded Democratic contests, and if we see some House there, some House races and state legislative races where, there are two Democrats advancing, then I think you're going to see the Democratic Party end up sapping a lot of money that it could be spending on things that are on races that are more important for control of the House and other bodies.
Even within the party, there's the generational change candidates, as they're being referred to. I mean, even here in our backyard, you have District 7, Doris Matsui running for re-election, I believe her 12th term, with a challenger within her party, Mai Vang. How are the generational candidates faring? Because it's not just this race. There are others across the state.
Sure. Honestly, they're not doing especially well. You already saw one of the best funded generational challengers was in Southern California. Jake Levine, former Obama and Biden administration official, who was seeking to oust incumbent Representative Brad Sherman. He didn't even make it to the runoff. Pretty quickly, the race was called against him, despite being in a heavily Democratic district. You also see over in the kind of Napa and Yolo County area, you have Eric Jones, a former venture capitalist, challenging incumbent Representative Mike Thompson. He may get through to the top two, but in the early returns, he is sitting in third place behind a Republican and the incumbent. Mai Vang in our backyard is a little bit of an exception. She's been pretty close to incumbent Rep. Doris Matsui in some of these early returns. But yeah, across the board, it's not looking great for some of these generational challengers.
Yeah, like looking at current numbers, like Matsui has about 30% of the vote. Mai Vang has close to 25% of the vote. But in third, and not that far behind, is Zachariah Wooden, a Republican, with 24.1% of the vote. So, I mean, it's just really important when people are looking at results, especially in the immediate days, right? That, I mean, these can look very differently come next week or, up until elections get certified.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially because, early returns aren't, just to bang this drum again, early returns aren't always suggestive of who's going to win, because they might just be from, one or two counties in a district that has far more counties in it.
Well, let's move over to District 6 next door. This has been an interesting race because you have Congressman Kevin Kiley running, switched his party affiliation, not running as a Republican, running as an independent, crowded race of Democrats. You do have Democrat Richard Pan, who is currently in third, I believe, but then you also have Republican Michael Stansfield, who is currently currently in second as of this morning. So there is the potential that you'll have an independent and a Republican in the runoff following Prop 50 when Democrats change this district with the hopes of it going blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has been a kind of surprisingly messy one at the last minute. It's this district that was drawn with, I think, something like a 10-point Democratic voter registration advantage. And yet, because there are four major Democrats and a couple others, they're in these early returns, Democrats look like they were at some level of risk of getting boxed out in the top two. Even on election night, I had, you know, a bunch of Democrats in the Sacramento area, you know, texting and calling me and my colleagues, sort of freaking out about it. We did have, I will say, the folks within the campaigns on both the Democratic and the Republican side were saying, even back on Tuesday night, they didn't think a lockout was going to happen. They expect some of these ballots that haven't been counted yet to break toward former state legislator Richard Pan. And, you know, the folks in the campaigns were not worried about this scenario, but it did cause some panic.
That is interesting. And there may be an independent in Congress if Kylie advances and also like clinches the general election.
Yeah, I mean, if it did end up being Kylie against, you know, this Republican who's not very well known, then that would be pretty fascinating, you know, especially that he had changed his party affiliation after getting targeted by Proposition 50's redistricting last year. And, you know, if he was able to pull that off, that would be stunning, I think, for a lot of people.
What other key congressional races have been decided? I mean, has Pelosi's seat, has that one been decided, or is it still too close to call?
Yeah, Pelosi's seat, the runoff has been decided. Her chosen successor, progressive Connie Chan, has advanced, and State Senator Scott Wiener has also advanced. So it's going to be a really, really interesting runoff there, I think, between Wiener, kind of the more moderate, at least in San Francisco terms, and Pelosi's pick. You did see so far in return, Scott Wiener has performed a lot better than Connie Chan. But yeah, I think the biggest takeaway from that one is that that former Speaker Pelosi was able to stop a former tech figure, Shweta Chakrabarty, from advancing, who had, you know, challenged her before she'd even gotten out of the race. And yeah, she was able to push him out despite him spending millions of his own personal wealth to try to get into the House.
That's an important point, because the tech industry, they got much more involved, right, in this campaign cycle. Doesn't seem like they did too well, even, you know, backing Matt Mahan kind of, you know, lost steam.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this sort of sleeping wealthy giant was awoken, and it's, yeah, just, you know, really, really failed in the largest races that it's gotten involved in. It's not just Matt Mahan. It's in a lot of these congressional races that the industry has gotten involved in. It's performed pretty poorly. I'll say there's one bright spot for the industry in California, which is in a few of the state legislative races that they've become involved in. Some of their candidates are doing a little bit better. And, you know, I think it's maybe, you know, we'll see how they kind of analyze that and what sort of lessons they take from that. But I think it's maybe a little bit of an easier arena for them to make an impact, because it's harder for their opposition to communicate that, you know, that they're the targets of this unpopular tech industry in these races. And they're also just smaller markets, so it's easier to make an impact with, you know, less money.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Politico's Blake Jones. I want to head down south because the mayoral race in Los Angeles is just really interesting, particularly Spencer Pratt, former reality TV star, currently, I believe, in second. What has stood out to you about this race so far?
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, if in the grand scheme of things, I mean, Spencer Pratt getting into this gift, I think, was such a gift for Mayor Karen Bass. I mean, she was, her popularity had gone from extremely high to extremely low after the fires in Los Angeles. Council member, progressive Nithya Raman, getting into the race was just at the very last minute, right at the filing deadline, was
right,
a major
because she
challenge.
Endorsed Mayor Bass, right?
Yeah, and was an ally to her previously, and really no one in the city's political establishment saw it coming that she would get into the race. And so, you know, having Spencer Pratt in there, though, having him put out all these viral AI videos and, you know, get the few Republicans in Los Angeles excited and behind him has been huge. But we still don't know who's going to get through. Like you said, Spencer Pratt is in second, but you would, you know, again, expect these later ballots counted to favor Mayor Bass and Nithya Raman. And just in a ballot drop yesterday, it was breaking Democrats' direction.
So President Trump endorsed Spencer Pratt, endorsed Steve Hilton. Has he been paying attention and chiming in the days after the primary?
Well, he's posting on Truth Social, his social media platform. So, someone in Trump world is paying attention for sure. Yeah, he posted in favor of Hilton the day before, and then you know, the day of the election, he's also you know, been you know, pushing a couple of conspiracy theories about California election security on that platform as well. So, you know, he's paying some level of level of attention to the races. And would maybe I but well, it'll be interesting to see how much he talks about Steve Hilton if Hilton does get through, and you know, would potentially be hurt by Trump weighing in.
In the last minute or so that we have, as you know, the whirlwind, the tornado of the election season continues to churn. In the backdrop, the state budget, that deadline is looming. Where do things stand right now at the state capitol?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we're still kind of in the closed door in a piece of negotiations right now. We're starting to see some of these Senate budget subcommittees are taking some individual votes on some Newsom proposals, but I think we're still a ways out. You know, just to remind folks, technically, the state is supposed to pass some kind of budget bill by June 15th, but it's usually just like a placeholder, and then they wrap up negotiations with the governor around then, and then do kind of the real budget sometime after that. So I think we're still maybe a couple of weeks out.
Because if they don't meet that deadline, they don't get paid, right?
Very important. Very important incentive. So, yes, they will meet the deadline, I'm sure.
Blake, as always, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Blake Jones is co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Up next, legendary Sacramento Kings head coach Rick Adelman has died at the age of 79. We'll remember his successful, remarkable legacy leading the team, one that Sports Illustrated called the greatest show on court. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.